And welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and in this special episode, I'll be talking to Benjamin Bloom, host of the Blue Monday podcast, which is all about Ipswich Town. He is on to give us the opposition view of this match between Fulham and Ipswich Town on Boxing Day. We have much to discuss. Before we go any further, I have to welcome our guest to the show. Benjamin, welcome to Cottage Talk.
Good day, Russ. How you doing?
I'm doing well, my friend. I look forward to getting your view of your team heading into this match on Boxing Day.
Yes, I'm very excited. I've actually got the expensive seats for this one as well. So we're in the padded seats up high at Portman Road coming up on Boxing Day.
Okay, great. And listen, I look forward to listening to it. I'm obviously in the U.S., but I will be listening to the match, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, Ben, let's learn a little bit about Ipswich Town from you. Let's start here. Before the season began, what were your expectations for the coming season for Ipswich Town?
Well, I mean, like every football supporter, you get to the summer and whatever has happened before, you still expect that you're going to do better the next season. But, I mean, Ipswich finished seventh last season, which was one place off the playoffs. I mean, for about the last 6 weeks, though, they didn't really look like they were ever going to catch Sheffield Wednesday. But seventh place is seventh place. You're the best out of the non-playoff teams in the division. The squad was sort of thought to be pretty good. So my expectations were still fairly high. You know, you think, okay, all we need to do is bump ourselves up one position and we're in the playoffs. And if you're in the playoffs, you're three games away from the Premier League, although I suppose with Ipswich's playoff record has some worse odds than most teams. The caveat to the expectations being high was the football did deteriorate during last season. We started last season with Freddie Sears and Brett Pittman up front, and Ryan Fraser on loan from Bournemouth, who a lot of people will have just seen demolishing Liverpool for Bournemouth on TV on a Sunday a couple of weeks ago, and all the pundits are, who is this Ryan Fraser guy? He's really good. And all the Ipswich fans are like, yeah, we know, we had him last year on loan. And what sort of happened was we started off, we playing really, really well. We went to Reading in September. We got demolished on the counter-attack. We lost 5-1, and lovely Mick McCarthy went all Mick McCarthy on us. Everything reverted to type, straight 4-4-2, Murphy in up front, and the football then got... I think the word usually used to describe Mick is the football got pragmatic then, and, It went from the season before where we actually hit the playoffs, where we still played the direct method, but with lots of intensity and obviously with Daryl Murphy up front scoring 27 goals. The other thing was before the season started, squad-wise, we brought in two signings, and Mick doesn't spend very often. When he does, he actually tends to get it right. We'd had Freddie Sears come in the January, I think that would have been, of 2015. And so we brought in Grant Ward from Tottenham on the right wing, a young guy. And, you know, we hadn't owned a winger for about two seasons. They'd all been loans. And Adam Webster from Portsmouth, a centre-half, who has actually turned out to be a really, really decent player. So... the short answer, I've given you the long answer, but the short answer is we were expecting just bump up one place, improve the style of play, and we're in the playoff position. So expectations were high.
Okay. And I'm going to go right back to you because let's talk about the summer transfer window. It affects all clubs. How did it affect Ipswich Town?
Badly, because we get to the end of August, and I think it was the week before we play Preston at home, and it gets to 1:30, and Daryl Murphy, our top scorer from two seasons ago with 27 and joint top scorer from the previous season, is not in Ipswich at all, is not in the squad, and we've agreed a deal with Newcastle to sell Murphy for £3 million. I remember doing our podcast, the Blue Monday podcast, at Blue Monday ITFC on Twitter, if you're that way inclined, especially you Fulham fans after the game. We were sort of thinking about it. Murphy was 33. We got £3 million for him. And if Newcastle go up, which will definitely happen, I think we get more as well. So he'd had one amazing season in his career where he scored the 27 goals. Frankly, the rest of his career, he's about one in five, I think. He's not a prolific forward. Obviously, there is more to his game. You know, he's very big, very powerful, can hold up the ball, can occupy centre-halves and full-backs. You know, very kind of direct, powerful player. So the issue was, 1 week out, we've got £3 million in the bank, and we're all sitting there on Twitter on transfer deadline day, thinking, right, here comes our marquee signing, you know, our Marcus Stewart from back in the day when we splurged the money. And we got Johnny Williams on loan for the fourth time. That's not a joke. We've had him on loan four times. And we got Leon Best on a free transfer. Last year he played for Rotherham. So whether Mick was given the money, apparently we lodged a bid for Connor Washington of QPR, but didn't have time to get it over the line. We will find out in January, because if he's got the money, he's just had 4 months to pick out and sort out a deal. So if he doesn't sign anyone in January, we know we've got the money. Going back to my point, I don't think Murphy was the biggest loss in the world on the pitch. We've still got Brett Pittman, Freddie Sears, David McGoldrick, young lad, Andre Dezelle as well, could play up front, Ben Morris from the youth team. There's forwards there, but he had been the focal point for, you're going to ask me later about style of play and pattern of play. Murphy had been the real, you know, the entire back four and centre midfield, when they got the ball, were instructed to get it up to him. So I think it was a bit of a miss in terms of a senior player and an important player in that system. And we'll go on to this as well. Johnny Williams has just done his shoulder, and we're spending a lot of money on a loan fee and wages, and is now out for 3 months as well. So it was a bad transfer window.
Yeah, and very interesting analysis of the situation with Daryl Murphy. Age-wise, it makes sense. Money-wise, it makes sense. But like you just mentioned, Benjamin, is that he was the focal point of what Ipswich Town wanted to do. So to lose him had to have been a loss. And now, obviously, you need to reconfigure. But you mentioned a couple of players that actually, three players that have hurt Fulham in the past, McGoldrick, Freddie Sears, and Brett Pittman. So, you know, you still have quality players there.
We do. It's just the philosophy of the manager. It seems like the manager knows how to operate with a player like Daryl Murphy or Leon Best. And he doesn't totally trust players like David McGoldrick, where David McGoldrick is not going to follow your instructions. He's going to come looking for the ball. He's going to leave his position. He's going to not track back, but he's brilliant on the ball. And it strikes me that Mick doesn't overly trust players like that. He'd much rather have a guy like Murphy, or Sears for that matter, where Sears, you know, had ended up out on the wing, where, and he does as he's told and he gets back and forth. And really, it's those magic players, those creative players, that's where Ipswich lack. Pragmatic stuff, yeah, they win tackles, they win high balls, but goal scoring wise, they're not great at all.
Okay, very good there for sharing all that, Ben. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the season so far. Ipswich Town are currently 15th in the league with 28 points. Just share with me your overall view of what has happened so far in the season.
Yeah, it's Russ, it's really hard for me not to just sound like a wine and Ipswich fan on this podcast, but I'm just telling you, I'm telling you the facts how it is. You sent me the running order so I could prepare for this. So I went through the results from the season and I realised we haven't beaten anybody. We beat Barnsley on the opening day of the season. We beat 4-2, would be our best result. We've beaten Derby when Derby were terrible and Pearson was about to get sacked. We've beaten QPR and, you know, Ian Holloway, and it's not looking very good there. We beat them just beat Wigan, you know, they're bottom of the league. We beat Preston by one at home. Our best performance of the season was a 1-1 draw at home to Norwich, where for the first time in forever, we get a big game feel at Portman Road. That actually turned out to be Murphy's last game. And, you know, Norwich are our big rivals down from the Premier League, and we played with intensity. Murphy played well. Everyone thought we were going to lose, and we didn't. But the season has kind of been punctuated a bit by McCarthy's stubbornness a little bit, whereby we believe that the players in the squad are capable of more than McCarthy is kind of letting them do it. And that manifests itself with our central midfield pairing, where he's been going for Cole Skews and Jonathan Douglas, very experienced, very immobile, very slow. We've got a centre-half who's captain playing right-back, while we've got a brilliant youth right-back. And it all kind of tipped off with Luke Varney ending up front, a 35-year-old guy on a free who's basically an honest guy with a good leap, he'll run, but he's Luke Varney, he's 35. And Mick is going for these kind of trusted old pros over. We've got Ted Bishop, he's 21 in centre midfield. We've got Andre Dizel, can play off the front, could play up front, could play wide. Josh Emmanuel, young right back, could get in the team. We took Johnny Williams on loan from Palace. He's supposed to be our number 10. He's barely had a kick. So it's all been punctuated by Mick playing the percentages and playing everything, you know, refusing to cross the road ever on the basis that a car might come near him. Do you know what I mean? Well, sometimes you've got to cross the road because it might be better on the other side, Russ, eh?
Yeah. It's funny because I was just going to ask you about Mick, and you've basically answered everything I was going to ask you. I was going to say, is he basically stubborn? Is he stubborn in his in the way that he sets his team up? He's going with players that have been around for a while that he can trust, and really isn't looking to add youth to what you do, and maybe be more open to new ideas. It seems like he's made up his mind. What we say in another sport with a certain team called the Pittsburgh Steelers, they do what they do. Is it safe to say that Mick McCarthy does what he does?
Very, very much so. It strikes me that once an experienced player gets in with Mick, it's very, very hard for him to get out. Whereas once a young player, if he makes a mistake, he's dropped straight away. Do you know what I mean? You know, there's been a big thing. Luke Chambers is the club captain. He's a centre-half who's basically played right-back for three seasons now. And we'll come on to this when we talk about Aluko and how Fulham can beat Ipswich, basically.
Okay.
And he's not very good at right-back. He's a great captain. He does the huddle before the game. He goes in the community. He goes to the hospitals at Christmas. His hair's nice. He's got nice tattoos. He's not very good. But he's kind of undroppable there at right back. And Cole Skews in the centre midfield is Mick's guy in the centre midfield. He contributes no goals, no assists, and is very slow. And then you've got people like Douglas and Varney. And I think Mick just, like you say, likes his kind of trusted lieutenants in there. Whereas the comparison we make, when Ipswich were last promoted, George Burley had, we're going back to 99, 2000. George Burley played four, and we actually had four England under 20. We had Richard Wright, Kieran Dyer, James Scowcroft, and David Johnson, all in the first team. He went with the young players, and, you know, Did I mention Kieran Dyer? I did mention Kieran Dyer. Yeah. He went with the youngsters, and, you know, not only do they have that energy, but if you ever want the crowd behind your team, put a young local guy in.
Oh, and, I can imagine.
You know, they have so much equity with the supporters. But I think the other stubbornness with Mick is he, I've discussed this with Dave on our podcast, where all managers kind of play, they have a character that they play a little bit for the media, and we kind of don't know where Mick begins and where the Mick McCarthy character begins. And he's very stubborn with, you know, after a good win, he'll make some smug comment like, oh, I suppose the fans like me now. They thought I was useless last week. And, you know, he'll swear in a press conference. And the problem is he's very good with the media. The media love him. They think, oh, he's straight-talking Yorkshireman Mick McCarthy. He's very, very good at getting the media to side with him and make us fans look like we're just being grumpy and we're actually lucky to have him. When the truth is, most of the fans believe that for all of the really good work he did in the first two seasons, you know, steering us clear of relegation, getting us up to sixth, brilliant. He then had his best squad he's had here. We thought, move forward now, you know, take on teams, try and win, you know, be a play on the front foot. And it's like he prefers being the underdog. It's like he prefers being the away team. He prefers having no money, and he prefers having an excuse, if I will. But, oh, we're very, very split on Mick, yeah.
Okay, very good. And one other thing, one follow-up on Mick that I'm curious about, because it could come into play in this match. Fulham get ahead, and they're really dominating play. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know if it's going to happen, but let's just say it does. Similar to what happened for Fulham against Wolves at Molineux. They were dominating the first half. Second half, adjustments were made, and Wolves came back into the match. Will Mick McCarthy make the adjustments if his team gets down to how Fulham are playing?
I don't think so. Look, if this was an away game and we were talking about Craven Cottage, I would say if Fulham take the lead, they'll definitely win. But it's a little bit different being a home game because there's going to be pressure on him from the supporters. That said, Portman Road is you're only two goals away from the diehard fans turning on Mick. Any team goes 2-0 up at Portman Road and the atmosphere turns very, very quickly. It's difficult to say. I'll give you an example. In the game against Forest, Forest scored early and then they scored just before half time. And all they did was they retreated. Mick just put extra forward players on. It was a complete mess and they just kept us at arm's length all game. If you're expecting him to switch formations and bamboozle Jokanović tactically, no, I don't think so.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting there, my friend. All right, we've talked about a bunch of players already, but who are your key players for Fulham supporters that will be at the match to look out for with Ipswich Town?
So, the goalkeeper's really good. Białkowski in goal is very good. There is a chance Fulham could play a really good game and not score, because he's very good, even if they do create chances. We've got the centre-half, Webster, who's excellent. He's actually, you don't see it in the Championship at all. We've signed him for 3 years, and the chances of him seeing his contract out are so slim that Sunderland are already being linked with him. Webster defensively can have problems, but where Fulham really need to be wary is this guy can break an opposing team's press from centre-half, in that he can step out with the ball and really screw with an opposing team where they're like, oh, hang on a minute, we weren't expecting the centre-half to come out and who do I press now? So he's a very useful weapon. Look out for Jonas Knudsen, the left-back, and his long throws, although it won't be the first ball. It'll be crowding in on the second ball. Look out for Tom Lawrence on the left wing. Don't know how pacey your right back is, but Tom Lawrence can accelerate with the ball, close control, and can do the whole George Best, not in that class obviously, but knocking it way ahead of him and chasing it after. And then the only, I don't know who he's going to play up front, because he made five changes in the last game, and McGoldrick was actually dropped. Brett Pittman came back in and scored twice. So expect Pittman to start. Pittman is a goal hanger, you know, proper forward. So if Mick allows him to play off the last man, and he isn't expected to go and be pressing and chasing down fullbacks all games, which Daryl Murphy did. And of course, Pittman scored the winner at Craven Cottage last year. So he's a dangerous guy. If he's given a chance, he'll put it away. And it's open to interpretation. If McGoldrick plays, McGoldrick can win us the game. He's our most skillful player. He's that typical fantasy type player where he can be frustrating for all of the game, but he'll definitely come short. He'll bring your centre half with you, and then he can play it round the corner to the running midfielder, to the winger or whatever, and move your defence around. He's got no pace, so he's not going in behind. Those are the players that could win us the game. Just to mark your card, we're expecting, so Bielkowski in goal. The back four will definitely be Chambers, Berra, Webster, who I've flagged up, Knudsen. Lawrence will definitely play left midfield. Skews will definitely play centre midfield. The other centre midfielder will either be Jonathan Douglas, which you are going to want to see because we're very slow and immobile, or it could be Ted Bishop, which I'm going to want to see, but Mick doesn't really like him. Johnny Williams, as we've said, is out, so expect Grant Ward down the right. As long as your left back sticks with him, he won't go past him, but he'll run up and down all game. Expect Pittman up front, and either McGoldrick or Sears, who Fulham fans will also remember scoring after 16 seconds at Craven Cottage. But
I remember.
Sears has had his
I was there.
Yes. Yeah. So Sears has had his confidence ruined by McCarthy playing him wide right, wide left, and he's basically, we've got this great forward who's basically,
he's a dangerous player. He was a very dangerous player.
Yeah, and he's been playing midfield, and unfortunately, if you play wide midfield in McCarthy's team, especially, I know this sounds, especially dug outside, if he's shouting at you, you spend your whole game defending, which you're going to want to see, obviously, as a Fulham fan. So, yeah, you know, big danger man could be McGoldrick. Look out for Webster stepping out from the back as well.
Okay,
and Lawrence's pace. Tom Lawrence's pace, yeah.
Okay, great stuff there, Ben. Seriously, very good for you to share all that with me. I do want to mention, because you were talking about our right back, both of our fullbacks have pace. They both go up and down. Scott Malone on the left and Ryan Fredericks on the right. So you know, again, that's just for you. Both of our fullbacks are extremely active and both have pace. So just want to mention
and Fredericks
that.
Fredericks is very good going forward, yes?
He is. He's very good.
I guess the best way that they deal with Lawrence is bring Fredericks forward with the ball and just peg him back. But you just got to be aware it's not the sort of duel that between Fredericks and Lawrence that will last 90 minutes. It will be singular moments where if Lawrence just catches Fredericks in a foot race, it doesn't matter how well Fredericks is playing. He is damn quick. And I hate to say it as an Ipswich fan, he does get other guys booked and he does go down fairly easily. Whether that's just the sheer speed he moves at or whether he's cleverer than that in the dark Voldemort arts of buying free kicks, you know. But look out for that. His acceleration is really good.
Okay, very good. And I'm glad that you mentioned all that. We've talked about several players that have that are part of those arts. And I will tell you, Norwich City are very good at those arts, Ben.
Yeah, don't start me on them. Obviously, there are our local rivals.
Okay, very good. All right. Let's move on. And what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to read some information from WhoScored.com. I'm curious if they match up with what you know about your team as we get into strengths and weaknesses. And I'm curious your thoughts on this. This is what WhoScored.com says about Ipswich Town, and then at the very end, I'll include the style of play. They have your strengths as very strong in aerial duels. Protecting the lead and stealing the ball from opposition, strong. Weaknesses, keeping possession of the ball, finishing scoring chances, defending against attacks down the wings, are all weak. Style of play, long balls, attempts crosses often, attacking down the left, play with width, consistent first 11, non-aggressive. It doesn't sound like it's a consistent first 11, so maybe they're wrong there. Thoughts on the information I just shared with you on whoscored.com with their strengths and weaknesses and style of play?
Information's very good, actually, Russ. Yeah, like you say, you're right about the consistency of the team, although the back four and five is very, very consistent. The problem Mick has had with the consistency of the team is that it seems like he's got players he doesn't overly know how to manage, and everyone's standing there saying, play these creative guys, but what we'll go on to is the style of play. And what you're going to look out for is early straight balls down the sides of the pitch. And you'll be there, you know, you'll be watching along as a Fulham fan and you'll be thinking, oh, this is fine. We've won this duel. But it's not the first ball. Our wide players and our midfielders will then swarm over the second ball. So then the press then starts from, you know, a much higher position in the pitch. It's not big and it's not clever, but if you think about it, if you win the ball 30 yards from goal, you're very close to the ball in possession. Okay, right. A team like Fulham might work their way into a position 30 yards from goal, but we don't play through midfield. I can give you a startling stat. Last season, the combined number of assists for Skews and Douglas, our main centre midfielders, was one in 46 games. And that was at 2-0 up against Charlton, who were absolutely terrible as well. So even that. Skews did manage to get an assist the other week by hitting a dreadful shot, which turned into a cross. But then I can't remember who put it in. Someone controlled, I think it was Varney, someone controlled it and put it in. So you're totally bang on with most of that. We don't, for the aerial duels, yes, Berra's very strong in the air. If Varney plays, he's very strong in the air. In terms of actually playing with width, not so much. It's that the attacks, the straight balls are launched down the sides and then we swarm in from there. Yes, corners and set plays. Lawrence has got good sort of deliveries. Tackling, very good. Possession, yeah, dreadful. Yeah, we're not going to pass you to death. It's going to be quick, direct. And the attacks are going to have multiple phases as well. We're actually going to lose the ball during the attack and then win it back and go again. That's the level we're talking about here. In terms of weaknesses, last week, a gentleman by the name of Wildschut, playing on the left wing for Wigan, was having a lovely time against Chambers.
And I heard that on your podcast.
We raised it. Yeah. Does Aluko play left for you?
They actually switch off. Him and Ayite can go back and forth, but Aluko tends to play on the right and Ayite plays on the left.
We're very concerned about if the left winger can get one-on-one with Chambers, with distance behind Chambers, which he should be given it's a home game for Ipswich, that's a real avenue. The other thing is if the midfield is Skews and Douglas, and Fulham can draw Ipswich onto them and then play through with pace, they could actually just siphon right through the middle of Skews. Skews and Douglas are slow players. Skews is, I think he's the only defensive midfielder who actually needs a defensive midfielder in front of him as well. He's very susceptible on a quick counter-attack. He'll either make a foul or he'll retreat. And we're concerned about Kenny, and Johansson in that regard. So those are the weaknesses. And really, any team that plays Ipswich, if they can deal with the second balls and keep possession and slow down our high press, they should win the game.
Okay. And that was going to lead me to ask you what you would do if you were Savica Jokanović. You pretty much broke it down for us already. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'd switch Aluko onto the left wing, or
okay.
I would switch the two wingers two or three times during the game. What formation will Fulham play, Russ?
It's interesting because it can morph into several things. I'd like to say 4-2-3-1, 4-5-1. We were just talking the last show, maybe 4-3-3, but I would pretty much say it's a 4-2-3-1, but you have McDonald as your holding midfielder and Johansson, but Johansson is really going box to box. So he's really moving, and then a little bit further up will be Tom Kearney. So it really is, I guess you could say, a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, I think given that you said that, I would think that Jokanović would try and swarm centre midfield, really. Depending on where,
That's our strength, by the way. That's our strength.
I think that's a weakness of ours. If he can get Kearney one-on-one with Skews further back, up behind the forward, I think there's joy to be had there. It's just a matter of you just have to concentrate when you play Ipswich. We must be a horrible team to play against, because they really do swarm onto those second balls. You can be comfortable in possession, we'll win the ball, and it goes forward early, and we're on you, even if you've just dominated the last 10 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Just got to concentrate. Again, I said the goalie's very good. Bielkowski's very good. Am I right? Chris Martin didn't play in the last game.
Chris Martin did not play because we were playing Derby County because we have him on loan.
Oh, I got you. So he'll be back. Obviously.
Oh, he'll be back.
Jokanović. Yeah. And I mean, he did a number for Derby, but that was actually on Tommy Smith, who won't be playing in this game. I would think Berra, who's very wily and very clever, will be detailed on Martin. That's the other thing. If you're Jokanović, someone needs to be detailed to say, look, if Webster gets the ball and he's got grass in front of him from centre half, go and close him down. Berra can have the ball, fine. Chambers can have the ball. Knudsen can have the ball. Don't let Webster bring it out. But you'd imagine that all the managers in the league know this, know this already. So, but Martin's Martin versus Berra, that would be quite fun. I think that would be a good duel. If Martin scores, he'll have done well, and if Martin doesn't score, Berra will have done well.
What's great about Chris Martin, we've been talking about him on Cottage Talk, because at the beginning he wasn't scoring that many goals, but what my co-host and myself saw a little bit is his ability to distribute the ball to his teammates, and that's what he does excellently.
I totally agree. I saw Steve McLaren play. He played Martin up front on his own, basically with his back to goal.
Right.
And his ability to bring in who's a Scottish winger for Derby? I can't remember his name. Will
Johnny
Hughes
Russell. Johnny
him.
Russell.
Johnny Russell, yeah, very good player, Russell. And he was bringing in these two wide players. Obviously, they've got Ince there as well. And you're totally right. He was like the fulcrum. And then you had all these clever, Bradley Johnson, Will Hughes, people like that, all swarming off the front of him. So you're totally right. And he'll play with his back to goal, yeah?
Yeah, he will. And it's funny because when you see that, we've been talking a little bit about looking back at Bobby Zamora, because when Bobby Zamora's first year with Fulham, he didn't score that many goals, but he still got his teammates involved, and Roy Hodgson would say, he's doing a job. And then his second season, he took off with the goals. Yeah. What?
Daryl Murphy, exactly the same thing.
Yeah. And that's what's great about Chris Martin is that he's a very unselfish player. And he gets his teammates involved, and that's why he is really a key to what Fulham want to do. Like you said, with his back to goal, he really then can distribute. It can go right off of his chest, bounce right off his chest to a player, or he can distribute with his feet. And he's a key to what we want to do. And I've also mentioned to you off air, player to watch, and you've talked about it on your podcast, is Stefan Johansson.
Can you tell me a bit? But I'm so excited to see him after. I think it was a few weeks ago he scored one with the outside of his foot. And, we do our roundup on that podcast, and we were drooling a bit over that goal. You know, Russ, Ipswich don't score very often, so we normally just enjoy other teams' goals. But and then every week since he's scored, but you're telling me he's box to box as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean he really goes this guy goes up and down. I mean, he really is everywhere. And when he has got the ball and he's moving and he's distributing, look out, because that really is a thing to watch. Yes, he's scoring a good amount of goals, but it's more of what he does right in central midfield that really is kind of like the engine. I mean, you have Kevin McDonald that goes from Kevin McDonald to Stefan Johansson, and he'll distribute it up to Kearney or out wide. When it gets out wide, that's when it gets fun for us, because we've already talked about Aluko and then Ayite. So, and then, of course, you can get it right up to Chris Martin. But it really, you know, we were talking about player of the season so far, and I put a question up on the Cutters Talk Facebook page. You know, who's the player of the season? The majority of the fans said Stefan Johansson, because we have not had a player like that in several seasons. It's not a total comparison, but we've been missing a player like Moussa Dembele, the original Moussa Dembele, for a long time. And he does some of that, but he also scores more goals. He actually scores more goals than Moussa Dembele ever did. So Stefan Johansson really has been a valuable player for Fulham this season.
Well, a couple of things on that, Russ. As soon as you describe him, Ipswich is, depending on where you lean, either greatest or second greatest ever player is John Walk. And John Walk was a box-to-box guy. And the reason he scored so many is because his starting position was so, you know, very much like a Frank Lampard would.
Yeah.
His starting position was so far back.
Right.
It's just unmarkable. Do you know what I mean? And he, you know, everyone think, right, okay, centre forward, so yeah, we've got all this cover. Ball goes in the box and this guy comes from way further back, and maybe Johansson's playing that role. And just on another tactical matter, sorry, just the Ipswich fans, I'm not comparing Stefan Johansson with John Walk. John Walk is a beautiful human being who scored 36 goals in one season and won Footballer of the Year. So you take my point. What sounds worrying to me is if Kevin McDonald is playing deep and the ball gets to him in his own half, I don't see Ipswich's midfield coming forward to press him. So either one of our forwards is going to be detailed to go back with him, which takes an attacking threat away, or Kevin McDonald's going to have a lovely old time and make a lot of passes on Boxing Day.
Well, what's interesting about McDonald, because I thought one of his best matches was against Wolves, and he was everywhere, Ben. I mean, he was seriously everywhere. Whenever Wolves wanted to break, it was him intercepting pass after pass after pass. And that's where he is really strong at. And then, obviously, he can also pass it himself. But he has been, we're fortunate that we have this midfield that we have now, because for several seasons, Fulham's central midfield has been a disaster area, and it just isn't anymore. It really is a strength, and going into this match, if you're a Ipswich Town supporter, that's where you need to get control of the match, is in central midfield, because that's where we go, and that's really the engine of Fulham Football Club is right there. All right, my friend.
Well, that's what.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Quickly, that's what Cole Skews is supposed to be doing for Ipswich, but he's a bit off the boil. You know, he's not necessary. The way you describe McDonald is exactly what I want Skews to be: aggressive, front foot, closing people down, and then when he gets the ball, you know, really giving it to people, but giving it to people not just, oh, I did my tackle and there's my pass, there you go, I'm fine, but you know, driving it forward, giving it to people in good positions, encouraging them to be forward. You know, even that stupid thing of just pass it 2 yards ahead of the guy to force him to run forward. Do you know what I mean? It's very, I'd rather not take a risk here. I'd rather not give the ball away and get back in my position. And again, whether he's been instructed, you're not to leave in front of the back four, fine, but it's certainly something that can be picked apart if you have Johansson or Kearney or Aluko dribbling through those areas.
Okay, very good. One other thing I want to mention for you, again, this is for Ipswich Town supporters that maybe aren't as familiar with Fulham, talking about the strengths. I want to mention something that that you should be aware of. Like I mentioned, Tomas Kalas will not be in this match. He's been just a rock in central defense as a center back. Without him, things are going to be a little bit interesting. We have options, but he really has been a key to the defense. And the situation at goalkeeper, it's a little shaky right now. When David Button looks nervous, it really does. It seems that it affects the back four. And in some matches, he's looked nervous. So if you notice that, then that's probably a good sign for Ipswich Town if David Button's nervous. If he's on his game and has confidence, he'll be fine. But if he's looking nervous back there, that's not a good sign for Fulham. So I just wanted to mention that, Ben.
Yeah, who's gonna replace Kalas?
It's interesting because it could be. I want to say it'll probably be Michael Mattel and Ragnar Sigurdsson that you might know from the Euros, or it might be Tim Ream. I'm not exactly sure. It'll be two out of those three.
Okay. Yeah. It just depends whether if he goes for Varney up front, it'll be a powerful attack, and you're gonna want the tall player there. If it's McGoldrick or Sears, that's skill or pace. So there's different ways they could play it. But again, if the philosophy is, you know, bunging it up and winning the second ball, then, you know, your defenders have just got to stay firm, come and get the ball and concentrate.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, great, great show here. I've enjoyed every minute of this, Ben. But before we go, I have to get a prediction from you. I actually listened to your podcast. I believe your co-host Dave predicted a draw. So what is your prediction?
Well, we think Fulham are going to score on the basis of 38 goals for, I think I'm right. So Ipswich need to score twice, I think, to win. So optimistically, I think the best it could be for Ipswich is a 2-1 or a 3-1 in my wildest dreams. If we kept a clean sheet, I'd be very, very happy. We could sneak a 1-0, but I'm expecting Fulham to score. So my football supporters' optimism will go for a 2-1 to Ipswich. I think if we escape with a 1-1 or a, you know, it'd just be nice to have a bit of fun on Boxing Day, 2-2 or something like that. But as I said to you before in the Forest game, the fans are okay a goal behind, but if Fulham get two goals in front at whatever point in the game, that stadium is turning nasty. Everyone's ready to go for McCarthy, especially one end of the ground, and you know it's up for grabs there. So hopefully we can get away without losing, but I do expect Fulham to score.
Okay, very good. Great, great interview, Ben. This has been a lot of fun. I'm so happy that you're able to do this with me. Before we go, please tell everyone how they can reach you on Twitter, the podcast. Please share with us now where they can reach Benjamin Bloom, and of course your wonderful podcast. Please tell everyone.
Absolutely, Russ. So our podcast is called the Blue Monday Podcast. We drop, as the title would suggest, every Monday. Obviously, it'd be nice if some of you Fulham fans would tune in after the Fulham game to get our incredibly balanced and sensible review. We are genuinely looking forward to seeing Kearney and Johansson and Aluko. You know, we don't have those creative, or we're not using those creative types at Ipswich. You can follow us on Twitter at Blue Monday ITFC. If you are a Fulham fan and you do check out the pod, please send us a tweet. It'd be lovely to hear from you. I myself am on Twitter at Benjamin Bloom. So if you enjoyed what me and Russ have done today, give us a follow and say hi. And also, if you disagree with anything I've said, please, you know, other opinions are available.
Okay, very good. Major thank you, Ben. It really has been a pleasure speaking to you today.
It's been a blast.
Okay, it really has been. I've enjoyed this a great deal. But it is time to wrap this up. For Benjamin Bloom, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.